This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host of Yoga Birth Babies, and today we have a really special community birth story. And it's special to me because it's one of our PYC teaching team's birth story, Caroline Williams. Caroline has taught for several years at PYC, and she just recently left New York and she moved out west. Oh, we're going to miss her. She's an amazing teacher. And she recently had a baby. And I asked her if she is willing at this point postpartum to jump on and do a podcast episode, and she said yes. So I think you're going to enjoy this incredible birth story. She had some challenges, which I think a lot of people can relate to. And then we can also celebrate the birth of her daughter. So I'm appreciative that she shared that with us. And I think as a listener, you'll get a lot out of that. But let me tell you a little bit about Caroline. So she started her yoga journey over 10 years ago, seeking a sense of peace while pursuing a career in politics. And 5 years ago, she changed career paths when she completed her yoga certification. And she started a YouTube channel, which now has over 45,000 subscribers. She specializes in teaching faith-based yoga and prenatal yoga. She trained at PYC. And prior to COVID, she led yoga retreats all around the world. But these days, she leads an online yoga community called The Abbey from her home in the Pacific Northwest. And she just welcomed her first baby. So it's an awesome story. So thank you for listening. Before we get to that, I wanted to thank everyone that continues to come to class and show up online. Our community has blossomed so beautifully. At the beginning of every class, we go around and do circle time where people say their name and how far along they are. And we recently added saying where they're tuning in from. And I just love hearing that people are tuning in from all around the world. Wow, our community has really expanded. And I just love knowing that we are here supporting one another. Pregnancy can feel isolating, and we can break down those walls and that isolation by showing up for one another. So thank you for those that are doing so. If you are interested in continuing to learn about what we're doing online, check out on our website, prenatalyogacenter.com, and you can sign up and join our newsletter. And when you do, when you sign up, you'll get a downloadable, the 5 simple solutions to the most common pregnancy pains. And it's a great little downloadable that you can just refer to if your back's hurting, if your hips are hurting, your butt, your shoulders, whatever. We've got it all covered for you, the 5 simple solutions. We also have our teacher training, and we know we're doing the March and April online. I don't know about the fall. So if you are thinking that you want to take the PYC teacher training, you may not be able to or want to come to New York. We've got the March, April one online. So check that out. That's also on our website. Okay, enough about me. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, please enjoy the conversation with Caroline. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
Hi, Deb. I'm so good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to hear about your birth story. I've watched it online. I miss that you're not teaching at PYC and you're not in the area anymore. And I couldn't watch you go through your pregnancy, but it was fun. At least that's what social media is for.
Totally. I'm so grateful to be here and excited to share my story. And yeah, what a wild year of being pregnant.
Oh,
person with other people, but
yeah, you've had some big changes recently. I mean, you moved, you had a baby. That's a lot going on.
It was kind of a big year.
So I guess I've had the joy of getting to know you because you did the PYC teacher training and I was fortunate enough to have you as a teacher on staff. I'd love if you can just share a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. I have been a yoga teacher for just over 5 years and trained at PYC about 4 years ago. Always had an interest in birth and thought for a while. I used to work in politics and spent a few years being like, oh, I don't think this is what I want to do. What do I actually want to do? And in the midst of that was like, I'm going to become a midwife and started exploring that route and then realized very quickly like, oh, I don't do well with bodily fluids and like having a person's life in my hands is a lot of responsibility. So I kind of shelved that and like many yoga teachers just loved the practice and signed up for training, loved that. And then, discovered like, oh, I could teach yoga to pregnant people and it would satisfy this birth itch without, you know, having someone's life in my hands. So loved my training at PYC, loved the years that I got to teach there and the students I got to meet. And, always was curious about being pregnant myself and thought I would really love it. I would say to people, you know, like, I don't really know how I feel about being a mother, but I'm excited for like pregnancy and birth. Like that really excited me. So it was interesting to finally walk through that myself this last year.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear about that. And don't forget, I mean, I would love for you to share, not don't forget, because clearly you know, but you also, what's so interesting is I had no idea about your other teachings, your faith-based teachings. The whole time that you were doing teacher training and even starting as a teacher, it wasn't until I kind of caught that on the side. You don't talk about that as much, or you didn't during the training. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So, my real passion and what I feel I'm most naturally inclined towards is teaching yoga from a faith-based perspective. So weaving in like Christian spirituality into the classes I teach and really helping people embody their faith. I find in my experience and the experience of many people that our spiritual lives or our faith can be really disconnected from our physical bodies. And what I found when I was practicing yoga was just this much deeper revelation and intimacy in my spiritual life through yoga and just this embodiment practice. And so, I started a YouTube channel 5 years ago and that exploded. There's about 45,000 followers on YouTube now, and it sort of evolved into yoga retreats and now an online membership community called The Abbey. And so that's also what I do, is help people connect their faith with their bodies through yoga and meditation.
I love that you are so embodied within so many aspects of yoga. So I guess we'll dive into the prenatal part. That's my jam. So you taught prenatal for a while before, as in a lot of our teachers have, before having their own children. As a prenatal yoga teacher, how did your perception of pregnancy and birth and motherhood differ from what it actually felt like firsthand? Like, did you have this idea of it? And then once you went through it, you're like, oh, a little different. Or was it really a tune?
Yeah. I think the biggest revelation for me was how much slower my own practice got the more farther along in my pregnancy I got. And I think I sort of gained this reputation at the PYC, or people came to my classes knowing they were going to be a bit more challenging.
Yeah.
And some people really loved that. And some people never came back to my classes. And I always felt like as a teacher, I want to challenge, you know, I want to make this experience worth it. I want to challenge people, and especially people who are used to having a yoga practice and practicing elsewhere and just realizing finally like, okay, I can't keep up with those classes, but I still want a good workout. And so I wanted to bring that to them. And, but I think the more farther along I got in pregnancy, the more I'm like, oh, now I just want to lie in Shavasana for 10 minutes and move really slowly for 10 more minutes and then do Shavasana again. And that'd be it. So I was like, oh man, I feel for my students sometimes who I really sort of maybe push things, not beyond their ability, but it was challenging. And I, pregnancy is physically so demanding that the restorative aspect of yoga, was really, I find the benefit of it.
I can definitely relate.
I felt a little bad as I was pregnant. Like, oh man, maybe I should have been a little easier on everyone.
Yeah, it's good. Those that wanted to come back and wanted that, they did. But yeah, it's
totally.
Pregnancy definitely, for me, I definitely noticed a difference in almost the empathy of the pregnant person. Once I had my own baby, doesn't mean that you can't be an excellent prenatal yoga teacher with birth is not a prerequisite, but it gave me a different perspective. And I was just curious. And yeah, I'm glad to hear something shifted there. So
yeah, empathy for sure.
Yeah. So what was your pregnancy like?
It was, very textbook. First trimester I was exhausted and so nauseous. And that was in the midst of that first trimester, COVID was just starting to hit. We knew we wanted to leave New York City and had planned to move, but then COVID started to hit and no one really knew what was happening. And so it was like, oh my gosh, is this city going to be shut down? Will we even be able to move? And we ended the lease on our apartment, but we're afraid that we would have to be out of our apartment, but not be able to leave New York City and be homeless. So anyway, we decided on a Friday we were going to move on a Monday and packed up the whole apartment, rented a U-Haul and started driving. And I was, I don't know, 10 weeks pregnant. So that was miserable, driving across the country and doing that. So first trimester was exhausting. Second trimester was great, easy. Third trimester, I felt uncomfortable all the time. Couldn't, you'd sit down and 2 minutes later, you'd have to like reposition yourself. So that was pregnancy. I think the biggest thing I struggled with was, this lack of creativity and ambition, which were so important to me and felt so integral to my identity in general. And then I got pregnant and just felt like all that creative energy was zapped. And
that must have been hard.
It was really hard. And this fear that like, would it ever come back? The things that felt important to me, the work that I do that I really loved, all of a sudden I had no energy for. And people encouraged me like, it will come back eventually. And I'm slowly now, a couple of months postpartum, starting to feel it come back. But that was threw me through a real loop. And the pregnancy was something that we wanted and hoped for. And so there was this gratitude that, we were able to conceive and everything was pretty normal, but also this real fear and anxiety because it's all new and your life is about to change in a massive way, but you can't anticipate what that will be like. And so you try and prepare, right? Like you get the room ready and you buy all the stuff and you take your prenatal vitamins and you do your yoga, but I felt a lot of anxiety about just the impending change and the newness of it all.
Let's keep going on that. So I'm going to ask you to unpack that a little bit. So knowing that you really identified with the work you were doing, and I get this, like I'm totally my job, and the motherhood changes so much responsibility, even the time, like not even, but like a lot of the time that you once could have committed to your work is not there. How did the role of fear and anxiety play into this transition? And then ultimately, how did you come to peace with it?
Good question. I lowered my expectations for myself big time. Running your own business like I do and like you do, that it's all consuming. And for years I would call my business my baby. And I had a therapist one time was like, I just want to clarify, that your business is on actual baby, right? Like you can leave it for a few weeks and it's not going to die. And like the consequences are not that big, but I identified so strongly with the work that I did. And we talk about this in prenatal yoga, like how pregnancy is this invitation to begin to let go of the way you used to do things, right? Like the way you used to exercise, the way you used to move, because motherhood is this continual letting go and changing expectations and being willing to change and grow. And so that manifests in pregnancy and in prenatal yoga by changing how you move. And so I felt that on a more massive scale with the work that I did, like having to lay down or just sort of reexamine the expectations I had of myself and the work that I did. And I set a goal for myself to take off 3 months, well, 4 months really, on maternity leave. And so that provided a really helpful, tangible mile marker for me in my pregnancy, instead of giving myself the expectation of just continuing to work all the way through and get back as soon as I could, like to really give myself and Charlie, our baby girl, the gift of these first few months together. And there will always be more that I could do, and there will always be ways I could have prepared better, but doing what had to get done and then just laying it down and letting it be was my lesson in surrender during my pregnancy. And then just like really taking care of myself. I went and got a massage every month and continued to walk and do yoga and nourish my body in ways that helped me just accept and be with the change. And I think that's the scariest, one of the scariest things about pregnancy is that every single day your body changes, and what you felt yesterday may feel different today, but you don't know what tomorrow will hold. And again, it's just this preparation for, I'm learning, for motherhood, because what worked yesterday to get Charlie to sleep, it's not working today to get her to sleep. And so we have to be present with who she is today and what she needs from us today and roll with it. And for those of us who like to control things and plan things and be on top of things, it's a real discipline of presence and surrender.
I love that you said that. We actually, in my class on Monday, we had a good group of people and we were talking a lot about control. And several of the people said they were like 30, several of them were like 34 to 36 weeks. So one of them was like, this is starting to get real. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, and I can't control it. And I'm like, yeah. And it just was this conversation of learning to give up control. And one of the things I had brought up is we think we have control, and then we think we have control of our kids, but we don't. Like, they have their own personalities. Just like you said, you know, one day something you do, you're like, yeah, we got this going. We got Charlie to sleep. We know how to do this. And the next day she's like, think again. So it's like this idea of control is, it's an idea that's not realistic. It's something, if we can surrender to that, it can make us all a little happier. Which brings me into talking about preparing for birth. Talk about letting go of control. I mean, it's its own wild river that we can prepare and have coping skills and get our birth posse together. But it's really this ride that we just have to go on. So will you talk to me a little bit about how you prepared for birth? I know you gathered a wonderful birth team. I know that you were originally hoping for a home birth and then the possibility of a transfer. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I feel like in many ways, largely through teaching so much prenatal yoga, I feel like I've been preparing for birth for years. And physically what that looked like was, while I was pregnant, continuing to walk and do yoga and bring my body sort of to the best place that I feel like I could in my control to be ready for the physical work of birth. We're very thoughtful, like you said, about the people that we surrounded ourselves with, the midwives that we chose, the doula that we chose was a friend of ours from college. And so getting those things in order, I think, gave me peace about the big life-changing whole body experience of labor. And listening to podcasts, reading books, all those things were helpful just getting in the mental mindset. But it's, you know, it's going to be big and hard and life-changing, and you can prepare for it. And I remember Googling so many times, like, what do contractions feel like? And I feel like I never got a good enough answer from the
internet. What did it say?
It felt like, they're like period cramps. And I was like, but what, but how, but what? And I even asked my doula, like, do you remember, she's had two kids. And I was like, what do they feel like? And she was like, no, no. And it's felt like it's such an experience that it's hard to really put into words. I think people who've gone through it can relate to that And even now I'm trying to describe it. It's like, how would I describe a contraction? I don't know that I would have the right words for it. Besides, it's just this, you know, like we talk about in yoga, this wave that you ride, this surge that you breathe through and moan through. And, it's this surrender to this much bigger process, and you are sort of along for the ride of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we planned for a home birth. I loved the idea of having my baby and then getting into my bed, not having, you know, all these monitors hooked up to me or having to get in a car and drive home 2 days later. So that was what we planned for. That was where I felt the most comfortable. And, we were cleared for that. We had the birth tub. I don't know. Do you want me to keep going? And
well, I'll get into your birth story later. I definitely want to hear that because ooh, listeners, there's something coming. but did you in your mind have a plan with your team? Like, okay, if we have to transfer, this is what I want. This is what I need.
We did. We, in her Penny Simkin's book, The Birth Partner, she talks about creating your birth preferences, mm-hmm. but which everyone, you know, we talk a lot about, but what I thought was really wise was she was like, consider every scenario. So for me, because I knew I wanted to birth at home, there were a few different scenarios, right? There were the home birth preferences, there were the if we transferred preferences, there was if we had an emergency C-section preferences, there was even a like, she talks about this in the book and it was so hard, but like if something really tragic happened, like, what do you want to happen then? Write it down now, because in the moment you won't be able to deal with it. And so that was helpful for both my husband and I to really consider all the possibilities when I didn't want to. I didn't pack a hospital bag because I was like, we're not transferring. I'm going to have this baby at home. And, which I regretted, you know, when we did have to transfer, but, it was helpful to sit down and write all that out and just say, this is, you know, as long as there's not a serious emergency, this is what we want to happen. And so at least I knew on a piece of paper somewhere was we were prepared for every scenario, even if emotionally and mentally I was still planning on birthing at home like I wanted.
That's really smart advice. My doula Terry, who I think you took probably childbirth ed with that during our teacher training. She made me sit down and think about what would a C-section be like? How would I work with that and pack a hospital bag? And her thought is like, you pack the bag and then you just let it be. You just let it be there. Because I was like, no, I'm not going to need this. But she's like, if you don't pack it, then you're going to be more hysterical if you do need it. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
So I like the idea of really examining all the possibilities so that you're not caught off guard. So
yeah.
I want to talk about the fact I know you went 10 days past your due date. So uh-huh. what was that like?
Oh my gosh. It was
10 long days.
Yep. And it's just the weirdest thing because, you know, like this baby, like it or not, this baby will come out
somehow
by this date. And yeah, for me, that date was election day, which was also bizarre, being like, this baby could be born on election day, like as if this year wasn't crazy enough. but gosh, yeah, they were 10 long days. I had a lot of prodromal labor, which I didn't feel like I knew a lot about or had talked a lot about, but for all pretty much all those 10 days, every day I would have a few hours of contractions, and they were like, you know, feel like early period cramps. It was nothing ever really strong or intense, but every day it was like, oh, is this it? And it's so weird because you beg for them to get more intense. And I would go to sleep every night being like, please, I want to wake up at midnight and like, let this be the real thing. And I wouldn't, I'd wake up the next morning and still be pregnant. And it was just, again, another lesson in surrender. I did everything you could do. I did chiropractor, acupuncture, had my membrane swept 3 times. I pumped, I walked, I had sex. I did all the things to try and induce labor. And it was like, she's going to come when she wants to come. Like, I can do my part, but she needs to release the hormones that she needs to release to initiate labor. And I can't control that. That as someone who likes to control things was another lesson. And like, all right, she's her own person. We do this together. I can't just force my will on her. We need to do this together. Yeah, it was 10 long days, and I actually went in, labor started the evening of day 8, and she wasn't born till day 10, so.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize it was that long. I feel for you. My labor for my son was 2 days, and anyone that has that long of a labor holds a very special place in my heart, because it is... It is a different mountain than a shorter labor. It is a mental and physically, emotionally hard mountain to have climbed.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Like, people who are like, oh yeah, I went in at 10 and had my baby at 4. I'm like, well, what is that like?
Your second one. I wish that you for your second one. If you have another, just putting that out there.
All right.
So I want to hear about your birth story, but we're going to take a super quick break and we come back. I want to hear how it all unfolds. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, 2 days. Let's go. How did this give me the story?
Yeah, so day 8, saw my midwife again, did a stress test again. Baby's heart rate was totally fine. I'd taken this herbal tonic to help induce labor as well. She's like, I want you to do this. The circuit is what they call it. So you,
the mile
take
circuit.
The tonic. No, it wasn't a mile. I was doing the mile circuit. This was not a mile circuit. This was pump for 20 minutes, walk for 20 minutes, rest for 20 minutes, and do that 3 times and then be done with it. Oh. And so I was like, all right, bring it on. So I pumped for 20 minutes, walked for 20 minutes, rested for 20 minutes, did 3 rounds of that. And I had, you know, again, small contractions. I had my membrane slip that morning, which always sort of brought on a little bit of contracting. But they lasted, it was about 8:30. I went and took a shower and was like, okay, they're still here. This is the longest they've ever been around. And I had to sort of pause for a minute or two while I was having contractions, but it was nothing big. Went to sleep, fell asleep, but then woke up around midnight to go to the bathroom. And it was like, oh, I can't go back to sleep now. These are more intense. And so that was about 12:30. We called the midwife maybe an hour later just to let her know. Contractions at that point were like 6 minutes apart. She was like, all right, great. Call me back when they're about 4 minutes apart. And it was really like an hour later that we called her back. So about 2:30 in the morning. And at that point, like, there was no talking. There was no excitement. Like, each contraction required my full attention. So we called her back. She came over, checked me about 3:30 in the morning. And I was 4 centimeters dilated. I'd been about 2 earlier in the day. So I was like, okay, great. We're making progress. I got in the tub at that point, which felt awesome. She checked me again about 6, probably about 8 in the morning, 6 or 8 in the morning. And I progressed to 6 centimeters. And I was like, great, I'm going to have this baby before lunch. And I remember, like, we talk about this in prenatal yoga, labor math, where I was very conscious of that. I even said to the midwives, like, I don't want to be checked very often because I don't want the feeling of disappointment if I don't progress in the time that I want to, and that stalls things. So I was like very resistant to being checked. But at that point, I mean, things were progressing well. So I was like, great, 6 centimeters. I've been at this for a few hours. Like, I'm going to have this baby before noon. And that must have been about 6 a.m. She checked me again later in the morning. I was still at 6. Checked me again around noon, still at 6. She was like, all right, I think the next thing we can do is break your water and see if that helps things progress. So broke my water. I was in and out of the tub at this point, sitting backwards on the toilet or leaning over the couch. But it was all back labor, 100% back labor. And so Brian, my husband, and our doula, every contraction, it was pressure on my hips and my low back. And I remember hearing Brian whisper to the midwife, like, are these bruises okay? Like, are they going to go away? She was like, yeah, don't worry about them. But it couldn't have been more, like, I needed more pressure. It didn't feel over. I told him that I was like harder every time. But I felt like labor had to be progressing because every contraction felt longer and stronger. They felt closer together. I'd thrown up a couple of times. And I visualized with every contraction, you know, getting those last 4 centimeters, and checked me again at about 2 in the afternoon. I was still at 6 centimeters. And so now it was like, okay, what can we do to reposition baby? Cause clearly there's a positioning issue. And we knew going into it, that she was probably posterior. So her spine and my spine were against each other, which she was head down, which is great, but not in an optimal position for birth. So tried belly sifting, and I would, you know, put a foot on the stairs and try and do some side lunges, but the contractions were so intense that it was so hard to do any of that.
Can I ask a question?
Knowing
that you have so much information as a prenatal teacher, you knew what back labor was, you knew position, you knew what a dysfunctional labor pattern looks like. How was it to not be, or maybe you were in your head, did you find that you're like, oh no, I know what this means?
I think I felt, well, there was one part of me that was like, I know labor can be unpredictable, and at any point she can change positions.
Right.
Like even while she's coming down through the birth canal, she can turn herself the right way. So there was this sense of hope and optimism that like, we can do this. She can turn around. This will be okay. There was also failure isn't quite the right word, but a sense of disappointment. Like, okay, I did everything to help her be in the right position. Like I wasn't lounging on the couch all the time. I was forward leaning. I was, you know, sitting on a yoga ball all the time. I was doing my yoga, like doing all these things that you should do to help her be in the right position. And still like a week before, she flipped herself around and just settled there. And so there was a sense of, again, like, I can't control this. I could do my part and do the best that I can to encourage you to go the right way, but you're your own person.
Oh, she is teaching you early. Mama, I have my mind. I am my own person. Good luck in your teenage years.
Oh my gosh. We started seeing a craniosacral therapist because it was a long labor and she's had some few nursing challenges. The therapist called her a little CEO the other day. And I was like, that is a perfect description for her. Like, girlfriend knows what she wants.
Yeah. All right. So you're trying to sift baby. You had some realization that baby's not in the right position. Keep going.
Some realization, but also it was so, I mean, by that point I'd been laboring for close to 18 hours and it was so intense, and I'd thrown up enough times that I really was dehydrated and exhausted and just didn't have any food in me. So there was also not really a concept of time and progress. It was like each contraction required my full attention, and that was all I could be present for. So the midwife checked me again about 4 o'clock and said, you're still at 6 centimeters. And I felt disappointed, but not dissuaded, like, okay, we gotta keep going. And then she said to me, you've been at 6 centimeters for 10 hours. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? I've been at this for 10 hours and we haven't made any progress. And that's when it hit me, like, okay, I'm going to need some help because I can't keep doing this. Mm-hmm. Ryan can't keep doing this. Like, it was, you know, hugely physical work on his part to help me with every contraction. And, yeah, I just remember thinking like, there's nothing more I can do. There's no amount of my determination is gonna help my cervix dilate more. And she said so lovingly, she's like, you know, if you want to keep at it, I'll stay here with you. We'll give you an IV. We can try and do some more movement to try and turn her. But I think what you really need now is some rest. like let your pelvic muscles rest and relax because they're so tight because they've been working so hard for so long. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I think an epidural and some rest will really help move things along.
Had that feeling.
I sat with it for an hour. I was like, I want to stay and get the IV and just see how things go. You know, it didn't feel like failure, but I was like, I need some time to be process. Okay with it. Right. And to feel like it's the right decision and I'm not being coerced into it. Not that she was coercing me, but I needed some time to accept mm-hmm. it. So got an IV, tried to move a little bit more. And as I moved, it was like, no, I can't do lunges on the stairs. I have no strength. The contractions are so intense. There's no way I'm going to make it. So, at that point, Brian ran around collecting some things from my hospital bag. Cause like I said, I'd stubbornly refused to pack one. And we got in the car and went to the hospital. And the drive was the worst 30 minutes of my life. But we got to the hospital and I mentioned earlier, we moved from New York City at the start of my pregnancy and we moved to a much smaller college town. So the hospital has like 12 labor and delivery rooms, like this great small hospital. But because of COVID, we couldn't go and tour it beforehand. So I didn't really know what to expect. What I anticipated was, I had a lot of reluctance to go to the hospital. Let's put it that way. There's a reason I chose to birth at home. I felt like I was more in control of my birth, that I wouldn't be sort of pressured into interventions that I didn't want. I wanted to birth on my own time and my own way and felt like if I went to the hospital, I wouldn't receive that. But I desperately needed some help and some rest and knew that, you know, the midwives can't administer an epidural at home. So this was my source of help. So we went, I had to have a COVID test first. I had to have my blood drawn first. Once the COVID test came back negative, then they could administer the epidural. And it was just the greatest thing in the world. I remember lying in bed feeling like, why on earth was I so resistant to this? This is the miracle drug. It was just the sweetest relief. They put me on epidural and Pitocin and the doctor came in and with the nurses there, read over my birth preferences, talked to me about them, talked about how she thought we should move forward with care. And so I felt like the things that I was really worried about happening, you know, sort of being pressured into this thing or ignored were totally baseless. Like the doctor and the staff were so wonderful, so non-judgmental and encouraging and supportive. And I was so grateful. And I've had no other women who've had epidurals have sort of said something similar, like, oh, it's the best thing in the world. But it truly was the best thing in the world.
I'm so glad that you had a doctor that was absolutely like, I'm glad you're here. We are here to respect you. I think that's what a lot of it has to do. It's that they respected your choices. They didn't try to bulldoze. That's so important to feel seen and heard and part of the experience.
Totally. And just to have them, you know, I was afraid that we'd bring in our birth preferences and be like, oh, this is nice. And just kind of shove it in the back of a folder. But they like taped it up in the room. And every time a staff came in or nurse came in, they read it out loud together in front of us. And so it just felt super affirming in that sense. So that was about 7:30 PM when I got the epidural. And it wasn't until 7:30 AM that I fully dilated and got the green light to start pushing. So my body needed, and I had probably 2 or 3 IV bags in that time. I got some chicken broth and apple juice to sip on, and it was sweet. So, and Brian would say, like, he was like, finally about 2 or 3 AM, I sat up in my bed and the nurses were in the room and we had this like hour long conversation. And he was like, I finally could relax at that point because you were yourself again. Like you were lucid and could have a conversation. And, I think it gave him some relief as well.
Did he ever talk to you about what he was feeling during that watching you go through it?
He has said since, he's like, I can never complain about anything ever again. Like, what you went through was the most intense thing I've ever seen. And so I think he was afraid, but felt supported by our doula and our midwives and wanted to be as hands-on and present as possible. But yeah, I think it did scare him when I'd been working so hard for so long and things still weren't progressing. Mm-hmm. I think it was discouraging for him too.
Yeah.
So he felt supported by the decision to go to the hospital, but he knew my reservations. And so we got to the hospital and, you know, the doctor came in and was like, all right, I think we should administer the epidural and I'm going to put you on Pitocin. And he'd known from conversations we'd had and watching things like, Ricky Lake's documentary about, what's it called?
This is Being Born.
Being Born. Yeah. He was like, Pitocin is bad. And so he's like, is there something else more natural we can do instead of Pitocin? And I had to like talk him down. Like, no, Brian, this is what we need right now. Like, it's okay. The Pitocin is good. But he was ready to go to bat for me, which I appreciate. So yeah, 7:30 AM. Finally, the doctor said I was fully dilated. I never thought that moment would come. It was like the greatest three words I'd ever heard in my life. And I was, again, like so excited to start pushing, to finally be making progress. I'm grateful that I didn't know this at the time, but the nurses have since told me and the pelvic floor therapist has since told me that most women nowadays who have a posterior position baby end up having C-sections. I didn't realize that. I was like, okay, her head's down, we can push her out. But the biggest part of her head was going to be coming out first, which was going to be a huge challenge no matter what. But I pushed for 3 hours and, the doctor just, I think it was a slow morning or I don't know what it was, but for about 2 out of those 3 hours, the doctor just sat on the end of the bed and every contraction I had, she would help make more space and would encourage me. And it felt so affirming to be supported in that way, knowing that she was in it with me. She wasn't just writing me off like, oh, okay, I'll come back in a little bit. But she stayed with me, which made me feel like I am making progress. It is possible to vaginally birth this baby. They brought a mirror in, which I didn't think I wanted, like, oh, that's weird. I don't really want to watch all that, but it was so helpful in the moment to see the progress that I was making and see with every push what was happening, like what a good push and what an effective push felt and looked like versus an ineffective push. So that was something that I, you know, if you'd asked me beforehand, like, would you want a mirror to see what's happening? I'd have been like, no way, but super helpful. And I remember saying to the doctor a few different times, like, are you sure she'll come out? Are you sure she'll come out? Because my husband has a large head and his mother tells the story about how she pushed and pushed and pushed and she couldn't get him out. So the doctors had to push his head back in and then deliver him by C-section. And I was like, that's not a thing. Like, what are you talking about? But that ingrained itself in my brain, like, oh my gosh, this baby's head could be too big for me. And so something I should have mentioned earlier, a big mantra for me during labor prep and while I was laboring was this mantra that my baby and I fit well together, and remembering that I grow a baby that is the right size and the right fit for my body. And so I just kept saying that over and over again, like, we're a good fit. We're a good fit. And the doctor said, you know, I can't tell you if the baby's head's going to come out. Like, I'm going to sit here and work with you, but I don't know. She's like, we can try a vacuum, but just know that if we try a vacuum and it doesn't work, then we have to take you in for a C-section. Like, you can't try pushing some more after that. And so that was another good motivation to keep pushing, finding effective pushes, waiting for the contractions and pushing with them. And then finally, I must have just had one really good effective push. And I Brian had wanted to catch the baby, and I'd envisioned everything I'd learned. It's like, okay, you birth the head first, and then you wait, and then with the next contraction, you birth the rest of the body. But I was like, I had one good push, and it was like the doctor just grabbed her head and pulled her whole body out in like one big movement, and there she was, three and a half hours later.
Wow. I did not know it was that. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me now. All right. So baby's out. Brian didn't get to necessarily catch her, but baby's out. Probably massive relief in your brain and body. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Be like, oh, you're finally out.
Yeah. And you're here much sooner than you all came out at once. There wasn't like, you're almost there. Like, oh my gosh, you're here now.
All right. So I wasn't going to go into this, but I'm kind of curious because you said pelvic floor PT. You pushed for 3.5 hours. So I'm just inferring that, and also taking some knowledge from my many hours of pushing and what that did to my body, I'm guessing it was a similar state. What was your body like postpartum? How was that? How's that been?
Yeah. It's been, again, another lesson in adjusting my expectations and giving myself grace and being present for what is. I'm 8 weeks postpartum and my pelvic floor still is really sore. In the morning I wake up and it's sort of just like, oh, I have stiff muscles, and it feels a little like stiff and tired. But you're holding a 12 pound baby for a few hours every day, and Charlie loves to be bounced and rocked, and you have to really move with her to help her relax. And so you're doing that all day, or you're wearing her, you're squatting up and down to pick her up and down. And by the end of the day, it radiates. So, I'm so grateful for pelvic floor therapists for knowing that they exist, and, feeling empowered to go and find support through them. I had a second degree tear, but I think I've been surprised by how long the recovery process has been still. And in that sense, it's felt a little frustrating because I want to jump back into yoga and, you know, go hiking again and be more active than my body is really able to right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to remind myself, like, you pushed for 3.5 hours. You had a 2-day labor and you carried this baby for 9 months. So of course your pelvic floor is going to be sore. and I use the analogy the other day with my mom. I was like, it feels like lifting a bowling ball with a cheesecloth.
I'm forever going to, that's the best image. I love that. I love that because it's so real. I mean, that's just really relatable. Mm-hmm. And I feel you. I really do. And I think and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing this. I think a lot of people have had that experience, and sometimes they don't know, is it normal? Can I talk about this? And they're afraid to talk about it. So thank you for sharing your pelvic floor issues, because it's real. Those that have long pushing stages, those that have long labors, it really takes a toll on one's body. And the rehabbing, and especially for someone that's as active as you have been, it's hard to resist jumping in. And it can feel, again, like when you were talking about the transition into pregnancy and motherhood, and like your first baby quotes was your business. Like, I'm sure there's a part of you that feels a loss of not being as active as you may want to be.
Yeah. And it's the balance of knowing for my mental and emotional health, like, okay, getting out and moving my body helps all of us feel better, helps Charlie feel better, helps me feel better, but it has to be, it's going to look slower and shorter than I would have wished it would have looked at, you know, 2 months in, but we'll get there.
You'll get there. And I love that I'm hearing you're working with a pelvic floor PT. And I hope that all those that are listening, if you're having the same feelings, the bowling ball being held up by a cheesecloth, pelvic floor PTs, I credit mine for, I say she was like Humpty Dumpty, like she put me back together. Because there is, you know, the pelvic floor having that kind of pressure, it's a lot. So talk to me a little bit about postpartum. So 8 weeks, it's still so fresh. How's it?
I know, I have to remember that. It just, I'm sure anyone who's had a baby can relate to just how immediately and overwhelmingly life-changing it is. And you, I couldn't imagine life before her. It's how all-consuming it felt. And so in one sense, it's like, wow, you've been here 8 weeks already. Like, oh my gosh, that's so long. You're getting so big so fast. And in another sense, it's like, it's only been 2 months. Like, what in the world? So it's been for me so wonderful. I say, and I've written, like, the moment I held her, all my fears vanished.
Oh, that's
like, all
so
the
beautiful
things that I was so worried about during pregnancy were just, it was like, why was I even worried about that? Like, you are the most beautiful, wonderful, perfect thing in the world. And I have nothing to be afraid of. Of course, like, you know, now there's plenty to be afraid of. Like, oh my gosh, you're not sleeping. Like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with you? But all the anxiety about becoming a mother, was just, it felt so silly. My mom was able to be here with us for the first 2 or 3 weeks, which was amazing, because when Charlie was up, you know, thinking that 3 a.m. was playtime, we could give her to my mom and Brian and I could get some sleep for a couple hours. So if you have someone in your life like that, or have access to a night nurse or postpartum doula, I would highly recommend it. It was a huge help having her around those first couple weeks. And every day we're just trying to figure each other out. What does Charlie need today? How can we best meet those needs for her? Accepting where she is, you know, like, we would love for her to be sleeping 6, 7, 8 hours stretches, but some nights she does and some nights she doesn't. And that's okay. That's where she is. And so we're learning how to meet her where she is and be patient with our expectations, and just remember that this time with, you know, we're never going to get New Year's Eve with an 8-week-old Charlie ever again. So how do we really embrace today and be present for it today, and not wish more progress on her or wish for something different?
I feel like it all comes back to the surrender, which feels like it's been a theme well before she made her way earthside.
Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, like, as she gets older, the invitation to surrender will continue to evolve.
I actually remind myself on a regular basis to embrace the moments. Like, there's many an evening where my daughter will be like, read another book. And I've been at it all day. And all I want to do is be alone or in my room or hanging out with Joey. And I actually remind myself, I'm going to miss this one day when she doesn't want to hang out with me. And so that helps me on those moments of surrender. So I offer that to you too, if that ever helps.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been interesting to notice what comes up at, you know, like 8:30 when you're trying to rock her to sleep. And I'm like, all I want is just to sit on the couch with a glass of wine and watch Netflix, and how strong that desire is.
So, and that's like, wow. It's 8:30. I swear to God, that is my time too. I'm like, it's 8:30. I need to take the mother hat off. And then sometimes it's like, but I might miss this someday. And that's my through line to not slip out.
Yeah.
So what's been your favorite part of postpartum and motherhood?
That's a good question. She started smiling and like laughing the last week or two, which has been just
sweet.
So fun and so rewarding. I think it's been a very empowering experience. Something that I was having such a strong identity change, like, becoming a mother is this role and this title that you'll never escape. And that really scared me for a long time. But how much joy I'm finding in it has just taken me by surprise. I remember when my husband and I got married, I felt like a lot of the advice that we heard, or maybe it's just what I received, was marriage is hard, marriage is work, you know, all these things, which it is, like, you have to work at the relationship. But what surprised me, and what continues to surprise me, is like how much fun it is and how much joy there is. And you're with your best friend all the time. And like, what was I so worried about? Like, yeah, there are hard days, but the joy outweighs that big time. And I immediately felt that with Charlie. Like, yeah, the nights are long and it's hard and frustrating, especially those first few weeks and you're crying and we don't know what you need. But the joy of just being with you totally outweighs the hardship of it. And so that's just, I think that's been the best part of it is yeah, it's hard and exhausting and I feel really worn out, but there's also this really deep joy that I didn't anticipate or didn't know how to anticipate beforehand.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. So you have been teaching pregnant people. You've now had your own baby. You're now embarking on parenthood. If there's one final tip or piece of advice you would like to offer new and expectant parents, we'll be right back. Okay. I know I'm throwing you on the spot. So what is there something kind of simmering to the top of your mind? And by the way, can I also just note that at 8 weeks postpartum, you're quite coherent.
Well, let me tell you this. I sent out an email a couple of days ago to my online community being like, hey, join me for this New Year's Eve. You know, I was going to talk about what we're going to do next year. And I put the date January 31st. I didn't even realize it. A few hours later, my husband was like, you need to send out a correction email because you got the date wrong.
All right. So coherent goes back and forth. But you, right. But this first few months, like for many of us, it's very sleep deprived in a fog. And you really are quite articulate. So I'm just going to throw that out there. All right. So piece of advice, some final tip you want to leave people with?
Yeah. I've said a few times, I was the change of identity was something that really scared me. My husband and I had been married a long time before we had kids and we traveled a lot and, you know, lived in New York and really chased our dreams. And I was really afraid of giving all that up. And so I had a dear friend of mine, who's a spiritual director, create sort of like a day long ceremony for me, to really just grieve the previous season, help me be present for this current one, and then have hope for the next season. And I did it a couple weeks before Charlie was born, and it was just a really needed way, I think, for my heart and my brain and my body to all kind of catch up with each other and honor and celebrate what life was like before having a baby and really hold that well, give thanks for it, and then be excited about what was to come. And so if you are feeling, you know, overwhelmed by the big transition of becoming a parent and transitioning, don't feel shame or guilt for grieving what was. I think give yourself the space to celebrate and to grieve that, whatever that looks like for you. If it's taking a trip or spending an afternoon journaling or seeing a therapist or whatever. I think I that was something that I did that after I did that, you know, day long sort of retreat or ceremony, I finally felt peace and ready to step into the unknown. So, that would be my piece of advice or encouragement.
That sounds like a beautiful ritual. It sounds like it was really special.
Yeah.
Where can people find your work?
I am on Instagram at Caroline W Yoga. Or my website, carolinewilliamsyoga.com. And those are probably the two best ways to connect with me. Or I'm on YouTube.
I was going to say, you got a pretty hefty YouTube channel. That's amazing. Yeah. I am so happy for you and for Brian and for your family. And I also want to thank you for carving some time out of these first few weeks. I know it's a lot going on and I appreciate you giving me an hour of your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. It's such a joy to talk about this. I could talk about it all the time. So I'm grateful for you and the podcast and just the space that you've created and held over the years in New York and online and on this podcast for pregnant people. And it's an invaluable resource. So thank you.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.